Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 82 of Season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and join me once again today on this, I guess she's back at school today, you know, because yeah. Labor Day is now over, is Lisa Leahy from the Rabbit Hole Podcast Network. Welcome back, Lisa, and sorry that, you know, you gotta go back to work. Summer's
That's
over.
Okay. That's all right. It's a good time. I had my time to refresh. I'm feeling good, ready for a new year, so it's all good.
All right. Great. I'm glad because, you know, I look at it from the perspective that if you didn't enjoy your job so much, you wouldn't have been doing it for so many years. So it can't
true.
Be that. Or maybe you just like having, you know, your summers off. I don't know. There are teachers who do it for the fact they get 2 months off a year. I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like if you do this job, you can't. No, we don't get paid for the summer. We're only getting paid for the 180, 185 days. They take that salary and they might spread it over the course of 26 weeks. But trust me, we're not getting paid for summer. But yeah, no, I don't know. I couldn't be a teacher who disliked being in the classroom.
Right.
It's too much of a torment, I think. So, but yeah, year 24, let's go.
Yeah, I have another 10 days till I hit my I'll begin my 26th year in my job. So yeah, you know we
wow.
all
yeah
it's just crazy.
It's we're of a certain more
than,
age, Rob.
More than half my life. You know, yep. Actually, I'm even at this point it's more than half my life. So there you go.
Yep.
So minute 82. But again, as we said, if we didn't like what we do, we wouldn't be doing it. So
that's it.
All right, so minute 82 begins with John continuing his report and ends with Burns getting an idea. So we ended things yesterday with John coming to, you know, trying to explain, we don't know to who, because the two people who are standing there is some, you know, indescript doctor and the arm of a soldier. So I don't really know, because we don't yet know who he's talking to. And he,
right.
Yesterday he started off by saying Esperanza's down, and today he continues with says, but he's hurt. He took a round in his shoulder. Plus, I got one or more of their guys. Just to remind everyone, Thompson, you know, Rip Thompson, who got, you know, shot in the neck. And he goes, that's six they've lost mm-hmm. altogether. Do you remember which six are dead now? You have any idea? Have you been paying attention, Lisa?
Which six are dead now? Yeah, so I know Robert Patrick is dead.
Okay, or O'Reilly, yes.
Yes, so O'Reilly is dead. I couldn't give you the names. All I know is that I was watching Robert Patrick and determining was this first or was Terminator 2 first, and this movie is first.
This movie got him the audition for Terminator 2.
And I'm so glad it did.
Yes.
But yes, I couldn't give you any of the other gentlemen's names.
Okay. So,
but anybody who was in that air bridge, that sky bridge that they were building, they're all down now.
The Skywalk. Come on, that you can't.
Skywalk.
It's much easier to remember. Sorry. When you think of it. Think of it from a Star Wars perspective. It's a Skywalk. There you go. The Anakin
but
Skywalk.
But I'm not a Star Wars nerd. I'm not a Star Wars. Oh, God, words are hard today. I'm not a Star Wars nerd. So it's not where my brain goes initially.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. That's a problem.
Shame on me.
Well, you said I need to find a reason not to invite you back.
Star Wars.
So there you go.
Well, just don't call me for a Star Wars film because I'm not going to be much use to you.
No. But, you know, Pete and Alex have already done those. Nobody else is going to go there. You know, no one can
my
top
husband
them.
Is a Star Trek. My husband's a Trekkie, but I'm not anti either one, but they're not my wheelhouse. So.
Okay. That's fair. You got yourself out of that one. So basically we have,
you'll allow me to stay.
That's right. So Cochran, you know, died in the luggage area. Then we had Shockley, O'Reilly, mm-hmm. Sheldon and Mulkey were the four guys that were killed, you know, dressed as painters in the annex, in the Skywalk, annex Skywalk. And then last week we had Thompson die. So we got six so far.
Who was the guy who got smushed? Who's
that was,
the one who
that
got
was
smushed
Cochran.
By the
Cochran.
That was a good one.
Yes. And we have a few more. We have a few more over the next few weeks that are still coming around too, because we know that there's only a dozen of them. So they're down to half of them. Or actually, now that mm-hmm. they're one up because they can add Esperanza to their you know, cadre.
Well, we know that they're essentially half out. They don't though. The police and the
right.
plane and them, they don't
correct.
Know how many there
correct.
Actually are.
Correct. Right. And then basically, I mean, first of all, it's great just looking at, you know, as John is talking, you know, we have this doctor who's you know, wrapping him up. And did you notice that he has like a pin on his lapel?
The doctor or McClane?
The doctor.
Sort of. I may have noticed it, but it didn't register my attention.
Okay, so he has
because I do remember he was in like a suit coat, right?
Yes, he's for some reason he's completely dressed up.
Very formal.
Yes. And he has what's known as a caduceus. Am I pronouncing? I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Oh, you are. You are pronouncing that properly.
Yes. So do you know what a caduceus is?
That is the symbol of the medical profession. That's the something with the two. It's like the two snakes intertwining.
That's right. With the staff.
I know it's
the
symbol of one of the gods, but I can't remember which one it is.
The staff carried by Hermes. Mercury. Mercury, Hermes.
Well, Mercury is the Roman god. So yeah, Hermes in the Greek.
Right. So it's either. You know, it's the same thing, basically.
Well, no, it is the same god, but it depends on whose faith you're looking into. You know, when sure. I teach the Odyssey, it's Hermes.
Right. That's right. And I mean, that is obviously known as the symbol for medicine. And it was actually adopted by the U.S. military. And that, do you know
what, as for theirs or for medicine?
For medicine. Using it within the military to symbolize the medical branches.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and so that actually goes all the way back to the 1850s. Okay, they would have you know, hospital stewards would have it on their chevrons from there are cases that people have found from 1856. There are some people who say that it actually started in 1851, you know, but, you know, basically it was the Surgeon General at the time that decided that they were going to do that in order to some ways differentiate, you know, who's working in the medical profession in the military.
Makes sense.
Right. Then the Army, formally adopted it for their entire medical department as their symbol in 1902. And they would then add that to the uniforms, you know, as a symbol for all of the, you know, and anyone in the medical profession. I mean, I know that, for instance, in the Israeli army, that is the symbol for the medical wing also. You know, it's mm-hmm. it has a green snake with, I'm trying to remember. It's a snake going around, you know,
the staff.
The staff, exactly.
Yes.
And obviously, yep. You know, you see it quite often on, you'll see it on ambulances and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's just.
I think it's a pretty universally recognized mm-hmm. symbol.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I couldn't tell who this actor is. He doesn't have any lines in the movie. And I didn't see that he's credited at all on IMDb. So, you know, they just found some guy to say, oh, we're going to pretend that you're a doctor. And you're going to, you know.
Yeah.
We'll let you, you know, patch up John better than anyone else is able to do it beforehand and stuff like that.
You can patch up Bruce Willis. What an honor.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, you'd think that they would even have in the IMDb, it would say, like, airport doctor or something like that. You know, even uncredited or something
usually.
Like that. Nothing.
Well, I think when you're uncredited, you have to tag yourself.
Correct.
So this guy probably just can't be bothered. I mean, 1990, he's not the kind of guy, you know, judging by the hair color,
right.
Generally.
Okay.
I'm going to make a generalization here, but he looks like an older gentleman.
Yes.
Chances are he doesn't care whether or not he's going to credit on IMDb.
That's probably true. And I love after he, like, wraps up John, he, like, pats him on the shoulder, like, more or less to say, you're good to go. You know.
Oh,
you're
Zach,
fine
good
now.
Boy.
You're fine now.
Oh,
there you go. I wrapped you up.
Here's your lollipop.
That's right.
Move along.
And then Lorenzo responds, and he goes, well, maybe if we knew how many they had to start with, we could get excited.
Oh,
but if they got 50 guys, it's a little early to break out the champagne. You know, he's...
What a pain in the ass this
seriously,
guy is.
Seriously. I mean, he's such a pessimist. I mean, he's right. But yep. I think it has more to do with his delivery than actually, you know, I don't have anything against what he says because he's right, but just his delivery and the, you know, his intonation and his tone just makes it seem like, okay, this is not a guy you want around. You know, and also
Just the fact that he's not the one being praised.
that's
You know,
true.
McClane is the one who's showing him up at every
Yeah,
corner.
for sure. For sure. And I love the fact that you know, Lorenzo's on the other side of the room and he gets up and he comments on this. So it's like, you know, it wasn't that he was sitting directly across from John when John's giving this report, you know.
He's going to make sure his comment is heard, though.
That's right. That's right. And then the silence or the conversation between the two of them is broken up by the fact that Grant comes into the room and goes, "We appreciate your effort, McClane, but we don't need a loose cannon on this deck. What if they decide to crash another plane in retaliation for your little stunt?" And then John goes, "They can't do that anymore, right, Barnes?" And Barnes like nods and he goes, "Besides, if I grabbed this Bronzo, this would be all over by now." Well, maybe they're just a little bit more creative than you think. Well, at least I'm thinking, God damn it. Now, first of all, I mean, I like the argument between the two of them, but it's completely unnecessary. You know,
I agree.
there's no reason why Grant needs to come in and start complaining and things like that. Because John did try something. They didn't try anything. And but you'd think that they would have already briefed Grant on the fact that they've found a way around this whole thing that they can crash a plane.
Right.
They should have already told him this.
I agree. It's just this weird moment of like we have to set up this animosity further. We need to make sure it looks more like John versus,
Everyone else.
you know, the officials
Right.
there. And that's the only reason I can find a purpose for this kind of scene.
Yeah. That's true. Do you know the definition of a loose cannon?
Like a specific where it came from or the
No,
idiom?
just the idiom. What does it mean?
Well, the idea of somebody who is, you know, can't be controlled, somebody who's going to make impulsive decisions and is probably going to ruin it for everybody else.
Exactly. It is someone who behaves in an uncontrolled or unexpected way and is likely to cause problems for other people. It's actually also a idiom or a term used on battleships. A loose cannon is a hazard, any type of hazard that you might have on a battleship. You know, and it could also be a
Yep.
person.
Well, if you think like the cannon, if we take the literal meaning of it, right? Like a cannon, when the cannonball is fired out of it, you know, physics, this thing is going to push
That's
back
right.
too. And so if you've got this giant iron cannon that's loose, it's going to push backwards. It's going to knock people out. It could bust out the other side of the ship. So yeah, that is going to create some
Right.
havoc. So it makes sense to me.
Sure.
It's one of those idioms that I can actually logically think through.
Right.
Some of the other ones are a little weirder, and we don't know where they come from.
Right. And I mean, I love John's response. Well, at least I'm thinking, you know, it's a bit of a jab at Grant and everyone else. It's basically, I mean, I've mentioned this numerous times over this entire podcast that you know, John is the smartest guy in the room here. Doesn't matter who everyone else is. There's
Absolutely.
nobody who is smarter than John. I mean, in the first movie, we saw that John was street smart, and that's what got him along here. I can't necessarily say that here that's what's helping him because he's street smart, but he's the guy who figures everything out before anyone else. You know, he's the only one who's able to do that. All right.
I mean, it's very much that current 90s action trope where, you know, any kind of official group of law enforcement is going to be completely inept. You know, like that's this whole underdog story. It's that the people that you need to call are never going to be the ones who can actually help you. They can't find their way out of a paper bag. And this just, you know, we're doing the local airport police and the
That's right.
military can't find their way out of a paper
That's
bag.
true. That's true. And then Grant responds with a really, really strange comment, which we're not going to go too much into because this is a family show, but I'm still going to say it. So he says, "Listen, you wise ass, we're here to jerk off that cocksucker until he tries to take off, period. Now you're the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong time." So let's first talk about the first part of that sentence that he says here. Okay, I don't even know what he means by what he's saying here, because like, what is the advantage of stalling until they're ready to take off? How does that help
I don't
anybody?
know.
Actually, well, when you know what Grant's real plan is, then you sort of can understand that. But
Of
how can
course.
he explain this to anybody? How can he, find a way to explain that the reason we're waiting is because we want to wait until they get on their plane?
Right. It doesn't, I mean, it would make sense if we weren't in Washington, D.C. Like, this guy has been extradited. And what? They're going to extradite him. They're going to bring him into Washington, D.C. And what? That's a layover? And they're going where? Kentucky? Like, it doesn't make sense to me as far as like what the purpose would be for him to kind of have a layover and we're just going to hang out with him until he leaves again. I mean, the only thing I could possibly think of is maybe the idea that, airport security is going to hang on to them until somebody more formal takes them. But
No,
again, it's just
but
a
they said
weird kind of throwaway line.
the Justice Department is there.
Exactly. So it doesn't make sense, like you said. So I honestly, again, think somebody stuck a line in there as a breadcrumb, trying to, one, suggest other things, and two, push this idea of animosity among them. Is the only thing I can come up with. I mean, I got to dig into my English degrees to come up with that level of BS,
Yeah,
so.
exactly. No, it's just very, very strange. And then he has then Grant gets the most iconic line from this movie, where he says, "You're the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong time."
Story of my
Story of
life.
My Life is John's response. This was prominently featured on every single one of the trailers of this movie, for obvious
Yeah, well,
reasons.
it makes
It makes
sense.
a lot of sense. Renny Harlin says on the commentary that he made sure that this line got in there. For that very reason, because he wanted to make sure,
You
because
got it.
and he also said he shot it in a certain way so that it could be used much better in the trailer. I think it's like a straight on shot of John as opposed to from the side or anything like
Yep.
that. So yeah,
Yep.
I don't know. Down goes, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of interesting to like plan your movie knowing that there's certain shots that'll make it into the trailer. I think that's kind of a cool technique.
Yes. And also, Renny Harlin wasn't that much of a, he hadn't had that much of a resume before this movie. I mean, this was his first major movie. So, it makes you wonder where did he learned his technique somewhere where he needed to know that, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I want to use this in the trailer, so we're going to make sure to have that there. That type of thing.
I mean, maybe he's a movie guy. I think all of us could watch a movie and go, all right, that goes in the trailer, that goes in the trailer. We know when you watch a film and there's a shot, the money shot. You watch the movie and you go, you know that in the dailies when they were watching it and when they were framing that, they all just went, oh, that's so good. Oh, that's so good. Like, we all know that shot. And this was one
That's
of them.
true.
He's like, we're gonna make sure this is the one that gets in there. The title reveal of Evil Dead Rise is the money shot. It's like, oh, that was such a good shot. Nice job,
Yeah,
guys.
that's true. There is something to that. And John takes this all in stride. His response is very calm, and he has a very calm demeanor in the way that he does where he says the story of my life. Then we have Telford show up again. And he goes, "Major, Pentagon Situation Room, sir." Now, do you know who Telford is? Did you look up by any chance who this guy is? He's
I did
basically
not.
the radio guy for Grant's team. Okay,
Oh. Oh,
which
gotcha.
something will happen to him in the next few weeks. We're not gonna spoil it. Okay, but he's married to Rebecca De Mornay. He's like 10 years.
No
He's
kidding. Still?
yes, he is 10 years her junior, and they have two
Oh.
kids together.
For him. And she was huge at that time.
Well, I don't I
Like,
know
that was
they I
him that
think
rocks
that's
cradled
right,
her.
but I don't know. I don't know if he was married at the time that this movie was made, but I'm saying today he is someone
Gotcha.
who's married to her. I think he's been married to her for like 20 years or something like that, if I remember correctly.
Good
I talked a
for
little bit
them.
about that.
I like when Hollywood couples stick through.
Yeah, especially when one side of the couple is someone who isn't in that many movies. He doesn't have
True.
as prolific a career as she does. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
It's still nice the way that he does it there. And then Grant responds and goes, "Pentagon, I'll take it in here. Thank you, Telford." You men come with me. He points to a
He's
few
very
guys coming next
important.
to him. Yeah, I guess they need their silence. You know, they need their privacy and stuff like that. And then Barnes inches up towards McClane. Goes, McClane, yeah, Barnes, you said those guys. And then he gets cut off. We're gonna have to wait until tomorrow to find out what John apparently said to him about those guys. Who knows? You know, I just remember that yesterday we were talking about the fact. Remember, I challenged you about something that maybe was in the script or not, and we never
Yes.
talked about it. I mean, the fact that you know the video sleaze award, but it was in the script. We just you know we didn't acknowledge the fact that it wasn't an ad lib, that it was something that was in the script. Yeah.
Right. No, it was it was actually something that was written
Yeah,
for her.
sure. All right. So, you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script?
No, I think this one was good. This was a lot of yelling. Like, ugh, a bunch of guys yelling. Get onto the action. Start blowing
That's
stuff
right.
up.
All right.
That's why I'm
Yeah,
here.
true. So the script basically, continues. John says the same thing. You know, Esperanza's down. He's hurt. I killed one more man. There's six they've lost altogether. And then Lorenzo, unimpressed, says, maybe if we know how many they had to start with, we can get excited. But they got 50 guys. It's a little early to break out the champagne. You know, word for word. Grant mentions loose cannon. He talks about retaliation for the little stunt. Then McClane says, last I heard, they can't do that. And if I grabbed Esperanza, the situation would be over. So slight change in what he says there, not really much. And then the rest of what Grant says is exactly the same, except he says this time you're the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, as opposed to again, slightly different, just a different way of saying it. You know, it says John flicks away a cigarette and then says the story of my life.
Flicks away the cigarette. I can imagine it did the flick.
That's right.
That's a good little point
That's
too.
right. And then they don't have anything about the Situation Room or anything like that. That's completely cut out of the, or it's not part of the script. It was something that was added later.
Ah, interesting.
So every Tuesday, I have a segment called Disaster Tuesday, where
Oh.
basically because this movie deals with an airplane disaster, so I decided that I would, you know, highlight some unfortunate airplane disasters that have happened.
Oh, these are historical disasters. Oh, no, I thought you were talking like disaster
No,
movies.
sorry. Sorry.
Oh,
No.
dear.
Well, this
Okay,
one, I
let's
gotta
go.
say, this one sort of fits into that realm. You'll understand in a second why. So I decided that this time I'm going to discuss what happened with the actor Vic Morrow in while filming
Ah.
The Twilight Zone, the movie. Okay. So I mean that's a movie that was directed by John Landis. The movie has four different segments, and there's a segment called Time Out, where basically you have a character played by Vic Morrow who is transported back in time to Vietnam, where he becomes a Vietnamese person, a man who has to protect two children from American troops. The whole idea here is that you know he can sort of understand, you know, he they show him as a racist or a bigot at the beginning, and then he basically needs to he gets the opportunity to feel what it's like to be on the other side.
Live in someone else's shoes.
So John Landis, who directed it, apparently violated California's child labor laws because he hired a 7-year-old and 6-year-old children to play two characters, and they didn't have the proper permits.
Oops.
Apparently, there are numerous labor violations that were connected with other people that were also involved in this accident. And basically, what happened was is they were filming a scene with a helicopter. Are you
Yeah.
familiar with the story?
I am familiar with this. I am.
Yeah, I mean it's very unfortunate. All of these stories in the
Yeah.
segment, you know, that I've talked about are always unfortunate stories. Basically, what was called for is in the scene, Vic Morrow's character is supposed to carry the two children out of the village, you know, and go across a river while being pursued by soldiers that are hovering in a helicopter nearby. Basically, what happened was is that they detonated one of the special effects a little too early, and the helicopter tail rotor was still above it, and some of the metal lid on the top of one of the mortars struck the tail rotor, causing the rotor to fail and detach from the tail. And the low-flying helicopter began to spin out of control. And Morrow was running with the two children, and the helicopter ended up falling on top of him and the children. I'm not going to go into gruesome detail as to what happened to the bodies, but all three of them died almost instantly. What's very interesting is the fact that Vic Morrow always had a fear of flying because he claims that he always knew that he would die of some sort of plane crash.
Wow, I didn't know that detail.
Basically, he was the father of, do you know who his actress daughter is?
I did at one point. I don't know now. I don't remember.
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Oh, no, I don't think I knew that. I was just watching Annihilation the other day.
Okay.
And she's in that. She's brilliant. I love her.
Yeah, so I mean it's a known fact that Vic Morrow had a very strong fear of flying. There I actually
Somehow I missed
yeah
that.
there was I actually saw a movie just like a month ago with him, which I had never even heard of before. And you know, part of the whole thing was the movie was from 1974. It is called Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry.
I've never heard of that.
I had never heard of it either. It's basically a car chase movie,
Oh, interesting.
and he plays the cop who's chasing after them. Now, basically, Vic Morrow, if in this movie, he insisted that he gets a $1 million life insurance policy before he would film any scenes involving the helicopter, and said that if he wouldn't be insured, he would walk off the picture. Okay, and again, this is in 1974, so this is 8 years earlier, before this accident.
Wow.
His wish was granted, and he very reluctantly agreed to fly on the chopper. When asked why he wanted the policy, Morrow replied, "I've always had a premonition that I'll be killed in a helicopter crash."
That's nutty. That's Final Destination stuff.
Seriously. Yeah, so it's very interesting that you know, 8 years earlier, he you know, he was in a movie, and he only agreed to do it if they did a $1 million policy on him. You know, because
Right.
he thought that, all right, this is what's going to, you know, I'm how can you to have a premonition like that? Oh my God.
Yeah, that's scary.
And I don't know how $1 million would help, you know. I mean, help his family, but it wouldn't help him.
No, well, it wouldn't be for him.
Yeah, so there's basically been a lot of controversy over the years since you know, in the 41 years since his accident, about you know, about who's at fault and who should be
Yeah.
tried and stuff like that. I mean, they say that you know, maybe it should have been the explosive specialist, or you
You
know,
know what?
maybe.
Yeah, this, I mean, it's just a bad accident, you know?
Yes.
It's just one of those terrible, awful things that occurs.
Right. And even in movies it happens. I mean, we just 2 years ago there was that horrible accident that probably shouldn't have happened, you know, on the set with Alec Baldwin. Yeah,
Alec
these are things
Baldwin,
that
yeah.
that's right. These are things that shouldn't happen, but you know, when people sometimes do careless things, or you know, sometimes it's careless and sometimes it just happens to be
Right.
that you know, I don't know. What can I tell you? So, Lisa, do you want to once again tell people where they can get in touch with you?
Sure, you can find me on Twitter at FoolishMinion20. I haven't quite figured out how to start a second account on stuff like Threads and Blue Sky and stuff. So I don't know, maybe I'll show up there eventually. But you can catch me on a number of podcasts on the Rabbit Hole Podcast Network. Check us out at rabbitholepodcasts.com.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little village.